Welcome to the Film Reroll Fancast, where a group of internet strangers talks about our favorite podcast, The Film Reroll. Today, we're talking about the first episode of Frozen, and here's Brent, the spreadsheet guy, with some details.
Frozen was released by Walt Disney Studios Motion Pictures on November 27th, 2013. It was directed by Chris Buck and Jennifer Lee. The original score was written by Christoph Beck, while songs were written by Robert Lopez and Kristen Anderson Lopez. The film reroll was released February 10th, 2016. The original film has a runtime of 102 minutes, but the reroll came in considerably longer, at a total of 292 minutes, meaning, using a favorite unit of time of a certain reroller, listening to the film reroll version will take you 2.86 Frozens. The PCs in the Frozen reroll are Anna, played by Joss Vammer, Elsa, played by Peter Strait, and Kristoff, played by Paolo Quiros. In the film, these characters are voiced by Kristen Bell, Idina Menzel, and Jonathan Groff, respectively.
Thank you, Brent. Now, to introduce our internet strangers, internet stranger number one, please say your name and tell us what your favorite chocolates are.
Hi, I'm Daniel. I like anything with like orange in it. Like any, you know those Tears chocolate orange that you smack on a wall or something? Delicious.
Ooh.
Love them.
Ooh. Those sound amazing. Internet stranger number two, please tell us your name and your favorite chocolates.
Hi, I'm Steven, and I'm going straight in with the, I'm very anti-chocolate orange. I am very much a Malteser sort of guy. Give me a bag of Maltesers any day.
Wow, Maltesers.
I like crunchy, I like chocolate, and I don't like all the other flavors.
And my amazing co-host, Peter, welcome back. Please tell us your favorite chocolates.
Hello, I'm sure people are tired of hearing me on these episodes, but
no.
Now it's never going to end. I generally go for dark chocolate on its own, but I am also with Daniel on the orange chocolate thing. That's a big childhood memory for me, smacking those on the counter and unwrapping them.
Wow, see, I am definitely with Steven on the anti-orange and chocolate
thing.
I was
worried
so,
between this
no. as well. No, that's not a favorite of mine. Mine, honestly, my chocolates are the ones that are baked into chocolate chip cookies. So,
very.
That's just me.
That's fair.
Just warm and gooey.
Yeah, especially right out of the oven.
Melt hard to argue with it.
I know. So how dark do you like your dark chocolates? Like 90% or
100%? Oh, yeah, as dark as I can get it.
Oh, God.
That's a little too bitter for my taste.
It stops being chocolate, I think, after like 85.
I mean, I think technically it keeps becoming more chocolate as the percentage goes higher, but I get what you're driving at. It does. I like my chocolate to hurt. I want to pay for the sugar content.
Oh, gosh.
No, see, I'm way back at the semi-sweets. So.
If you put that quote on a bar of dark chocolate, it needs to hurt. I would
buy that.
This
chocolate will hurt you.
That's a selling point.
I do like chilies in chocolate, like spicy chocolate.
Yeah.
I'm down for that.
The extreme flavors of the
absolutely extreme.
Yeah, that's not, they're not bad.
Extreme chocolates company now.
It's a
I bet you'd make a mint.
Yeah, I think there is like a, one of those challenge foods that you can buy now. There's like a super spicy.
Oh, like the one chip challenge?
Yeah, it's similar to the one chip challenge, but
it's,
I think it's a chocolate.
Huh. All
right.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That sounds painful, but I'm in.
Definitely not my back, but whatever rocks your boat.
Wait, you don't want a spicy Maltesers?
Oh, no, thank you.
Scotch bonnet Maltesers.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, it just
that's so lovely.
What is a Malteser?
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, so, I'm not up on your weird British chocolates.
I thought.
Oh, you don't have Maltesers?
I thought you guys would have them. So they're like little balls of like crunchiness in the middle surrounded by chocolate. And they melt in the mouth.
Like malted milk balls?
Yes.
I will refer to the other bodies and say yes.
Yeah, I think it is just like malted milk balls.
Okay. Well, then I know exactly what that is. And I will pass on them.
There's a brand name, and they probably, I'm hoping that they taste better than just basic malted milk balls.
Teasers, huh?
I got to find a British store somewhere near me. I think there is one, like an English shop where you can get imported brands and things. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, they're Whoppers. I just looked up Maltesers. They're basically, if you know what Whoppers are, for those of you listening out there who don't know what the hell a Malteser is, it's a Whopper. Not the
burger.
For
those of you who don't know what a Whopper is, it's a Malteser.
We did it. We solved it.
Glad we cleared that up.
Perfect.
Oh, that's
our hands in this conversation.
The Hershey's branded Maltesers. Okay. That's fine.
Hello, Internet's Chocolate Fan Cast.
Yeah, like is this the announcement for the new spinoff, Chocolate Edition?
Yes. I think we're just going to talk about chocolate for this one.
I could talk about chocolate forever. But maybe we should talk about Frozen 2 at some point.
What about Frozen 1?
We're jumping ahead. We haven't even put it in yet.
No, we're talking about rerolls
I'm
that
killed.
Haven't even done yet.
I mean, we could quickly re-roll it and then talk about it.
Ooh, maybe that's what we should do. We should re-roll all the re-rolls.
Oh,
we should re-roll all the sequels they haven't done.
Yes.
We all take it in turns to DM each of the sequels.
Perfect. That sounds okay. Frozen Part 1. How's that? Frozen first episode is what we're allegedly going to talk about in this episode. I don't know how much of it we're going to talk about. You can sing. I'm not going to make a rule about that. Please, if you ever want to sing while we do this,
that's actually a dangerous thing to say.
That's actually a not half bad place to start. One of my first reroll. So I found the reroll, listened to some of them, and then I looked at the reviews. And the first review I saw of them was actually a bad review, and it was based on this episode. It was someone was complaining about how much Peter was threatening to hit people, and they were very not okay with that. And that was all just because he kept wanting to sing Let It Go, and they kept trying to steal it from him.
Yeah.
But I remember reading this long-winded review, and it was like one star, and it was just like, violence is never okay, and I'm not happy with how violent Peter is.
I wonder if they had a conversation about that, because I noticed that Peter does that less later on.
Mm-hmm. After the first part, it definitely stops being so threatening.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I could hear the smile.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And as well, like, he was absolutely joking.
Oh, 100%.
Most, yeah. Like, it did become kind of less and less as he went on, as Paolo kept teasing him.
I think, like, the best one was, probably not in part one, but when he was saying, like, the next, I think this is, like, part three, but I'm still going to bring it up. When he says, like, I'm going to slap you if you say Disney rules again, and then Jaws immediately goes, Disney rules, and he's like, you have to earn that.
Yeah.
No glutton for punishment here. But it's also the introduction of Disney rules, and it becomes such a unique part of the film reroll when they cover other Disney properties in the future. Like,
and like
it's
other
nice
movies that
beginning.
Don't fit with Disney, and they go Disney rules, and like, nope, not this movie.
Yeah, MGM rules.
They will keep trying. We
MGM
will get
rules.
Disney in there somewhere.
Yeah, John, this is the first time we hear John as a GM, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
Which I think we talked about once before. I always forget how early in the show's history he took over, for one. I always think it took a lot longer for Paolo to give up the GM spot, but it's here we are.
Yeah, it's right here. He also did... Well, he also did Aladdin.
Yes,
I wonder if he just likes Disney.
Yeah, and I think they were probably recording it around the same time, because I know they recorded like the first session of Aladdin and then didn't pick it up again for like a year.
Right.
And before this came out, they mentioned Speed during this episode as well, and Wizard of Oz and all the other properties they haven't yet released. So obviously it was all filmed in a very, very skew-whiff fashion.
Depending on who they could get together at the time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very much like normal Dungeons & Dragons or Kerb's games.
Yes.
Who can we get this week? Well,
and they're all busy people.
Mm-hmm.
Less so now, maybe. like a lot of people this year.
Acting,
yeah,
sort of
that's
down the pan.
Yeah, this coronavirus thing is pretty crazy.
I noticed though, Paul is a really patient player. Like,
yeah,
I forgot at some like early on. I know he's not in the scenes, but he doesn't like he's not in the scenes and he doesn't interrupt really.
Yeah, he adds some jokes. What I notice about him as a player versus him, I mean, he obviously makes jokes as the GM, but he's a lot more like free and kind of goofy and loose when he's just a player, because obviously he's not like worried about holding the whole world together.
But he's good for rule updates as well throughout. If John's missing something, he'll just be like, oh, just this, and this. It all lines up nicely. He's still got all that experience, and it's not big.
And he really enjoys teasing Peter so much more as a player.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I do enjoy their banter and, you know, just listening to their relationship, I guess, coming out, because he really is kind of a Loki sort of character. He's not evil, obviously. Like, it's not a Marvel Loki. It's more of...
Mm-hmm. Just kind of mischievous.
He's like a trickster god. I think I just saw one of those tweets from Peter.
He enjoys
the
anti-hero role, but not completely anti everything the heroes wish to do.
Yeah, I could see him playing like Han Solo if they ever re-rolled Star Wars.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely. I could see that.
And the casting overall this episode was like really spot on.
Oh, yeah.
Peter loved being Elsa so much.
Joss, I think it was, is the perfect Anna.
Oh, yeah. Anna.
Anna, yes.
I tried to count how many times they corrected each other.
They've also spelt it wrong in their description. They've put double N in their episode descriptions.
Is it not
double N?
No, it's one N, isn't it? It's A-N-A. I've always had it down as.
Oh.
I think it's two N's.
Let me go to the
Disney wiki wrong. Here. Let's get some
I'm going to IMDb.
It is double N. I apologize. I always thought it was one N. I've always spelt it with one N because obviously they say it as Anna rather than Anna.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I think whoever originally wrote this just clearly didn't have that kind of difference in pronunciation of stuff.
Disney rules two N's. There you go.
Disney rules two N's.
We have been ruled upon.
When in doubt, Disney rules.
Wow, I've been spelling Kristoff wrong too.
Wait, how do they spell it?
Kristoff.
It does not start with a K.
Apparently it does.
Disney rules.
Jonathan Groff Kristoff.
You know, I suddenly understand how Peter feels. Which is that one Disney rules.
P-I-T-R. He really does pull the... Pull
I
the
can't imagine
trying to find him.
Getting told that repeatedly throughout like this many hours of a tabletop of like, oh, Disney rules, and then you're like, oh, all right, cool.
Well, it's funny because he doesn't really get mad at Disney rules until I think the second episode, but towards the end of the first one and this one, he does point out that John has a weirdly condensed view of what like Disney is. He is starting to get a little irked by it, I think, in the first episode of the recording, but it takes
like
being
irked.
Yeah. He lives in a perpetual state of irkedom.
And, like, it was gonna happen. Like, they made Jaws Anna. Like, this movie was going to hell no matter what happened. Like, no matter how well Peter rolled, Anna is designed to annoy and perpetuate, like, Elsa's, like, self-destructive tendencies. Like, her mental instability.
The complete polar opposite of Elsa. It's perfect. Jaws is perfect.
Yeah, I think John did a really good job building the character sheets that way, so that it really does cause that kind of like cascading failure situation where you have, which my favorite thing ever, and this is the first time they did it, is Total Klutz, is that I'm just such a fun mechanic. So that played very well into the fright checks for Elsa, and then that just kind of continuously goes in circles.
So you have a question about so one of the early Total Klutz is when she has her friend, which like that's a whole lot of things to talk about, when she gets covered in chocolate. Does she ever change after the coronation, or is she covered in chocolate the entire movie?
Oh.
Does she not go get one of the maids and get a change of clothes while
she's
she leaving?
Said that, but then she got on a horse with Boris and she pissed off.
It was condensed, very, very much condensed, that entire section.
I think she calls for like a cloak at some point, so I wonder maybe if during that there's some, you know, unseen.
I can't imagine her going up a mountain in a ball gown.
Okay, let's unpack this section.
Yes,
there's so much.
We've definitely condensed it. It's currently in a zip file, and we need to unpack this. Okay, Anna. So it's the first time that she rolls for with the total klutz for the dex check and misses the salad plate carriers. So she passed that one.
Right.
After that, she's got Miriam and the chocolates, the feast. This is where the feast.
It was
the first feast.
The decoy feast.
Yeah, the decoy feast.
Right, the decoy feast.
The Anna feast.
Which was before
right.
the chocolate.
Falls
the
all over
later.
The place, and that's where she gets the chocolate on her.
No, the chocolates were after the ceremony, but before like the ball, basically.
I think she gets hit with chocolate twice because she gets changed, and there's a conversation where John's saying, like,
only
you got chocolate on you. Your friend's fine.
Oh, you know what? You're right. I'm sorry. That's true.
Yeah, Miriam was basically standing there in the midst of this feast, completely unscathed.
I feel so bad for Miriam.
I know.
And then they just dump her, but we'll get to that. But it's obviously she's chocolated pre-draping, if that's even a word. And then obviously
it is now.
The one from the decoy feast, she grabs a handmaiden, takes Miriam, and they go running up, and she changes at that point into the second of her many dresses that are all the same.
Yes,
and then she comes back down. They do the coronation and then drags her sister to get chocolates. When she is taking Elsa's favorite chocolates back up the stairs to Elsa's room is when she trips and falls, gets chocolate on her dress again, and then one of the attendants grabs her, and that's where she grabs the curtain.
The plus two drape, yeah.
Yeah, so she did, yes, have chocolate all over her dress for the rest of the movie.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, like I said, I think they come and bring her, like, a jacket or a cloak or something. I guess, yeah. I just assumed they changed clothes, but it's never really stated.
I feel like if John had suggested that, like, oh, you might want to take a couple minutes to get changed, I feel like Josh would have been like, no, I have to go after my sister.
She was very impulsive and got to save Elsa.
Yeah, she rolled leadership on John. It worked.
No, I don't remember her leaving, like, the courtyard or anything. Like, she called all of the attendants and people to her, the servants and so forth.
I'd like to think the drapes soaked up some of the chocolate, so she wasn't going up a mountain completely covered. But maybe the chocolate was an extra layer.
Drive the drape.
The chocolate was an extra layer of heat to keep her warm.
Insulating chocolate, you know, wonderful.
I've always wanted to go up a big Arctic mountain in a ball gown. Is it not everybody's fantasy?
I do love, like, Peter as micromanaging Elsa. Just, like, there's only real chocolate at this coronation. And
no,
John just kind of, like, at random threw out the idea of white chocolate. Peter lost his mind. He was like, I am going to clean house in the kitchens. So I'm going to talk to somebody about this.
What would you put there to replace white chocolate as, like, a glaze over the top to show, like, snow at the top?
I mean, like, it was like, because it was a mountain, you could have put, like, Malteser, like, boulders across the place, you know, sneak in some Maltesers.
Definitely.
I mean, I suppose if the mountain itself was made of more dark chocolate, you could use, like, a really light milk chocolate, but it would still just be brown. It would just look like a big brown hill.
Yeah, there's really, I mean, white chocolate is really the best way to cook there.
I imagined it as chocolate fountains that then froze. It was just like chocolate fountain sculptures afterwards. That's how my mind went, just in the hope that chocolate freezes over.
That sounds lovely. I do like to freeze chocolates.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite things to do, is to freeze chocolate. It lasts longer. I still eat just as many as I was planning to eat anyway. You know, it's not that, but it lasts longer.
Oh, you know, I used to keep a big bag of M&Ms or, like, peanut M&Ms in the freezer. Don't know why, but I think they're just better that way.
Yeah.
It's refreshing.
Well, I might have to try that. Of course, I'm M&Ms.
Yeah, I do the little Reese's Minis.
Oh.
Those little mini cups. Those are best frozen.
Those are very good.
We're still technically on frozen.
We really are just talking about chocolate.
We've just moved to the frozen section. We haven't moved away from frozen.
Yeah. Yeah, so what are...
Hey, sorry, Anita. Hey, I just got on the chat. Yeah, sorry, that time converting. Sorry to jump in, guys. You're doing this an hour later than last time.
Right? Hey there, Big Jack. Welcome.
Hey, everyone. I don't have to join in if you don't want.
Please do.
You're here. We're only 20 minutes in, and still just talking about chocolate, really.
Chocolate. We've been mostly talking about chocolate.
Already had the across-the-pond differences. They didn't know what Maltesers were, so...
Whoa. Some of us didn't know what Maltesers were.
Pretty much just me. Everyone else seemed to know exactly what you were talking about. I've never heard of them.
Oh, I just back you all up.
Okay.
So. I never knew what they were, but I've heard of them. That's the best I can do.
We could ask, obviously, Jack, what is your favorite chocolate?
My favorite chocolate? I think it'd have to be something with caramel in it. In America, but in Australia, we have these things called caramello koalas or caramello koala. It's like a little, you have it as a kid a lot, and it's just like a little, probably like the size of your palm, maybe. It's just a little wrapper in chocolate, and it's designed to look like a koala bear. And it's got, it's chocolate, it's got like this caramel.
We definitely don't have those.
It's really nice.
Adorable and tasty, and we definitely don't have those here.
I'm going to take a wild guess, and based on the koala, that's probably just an Australian thing.
Yeah. I think that's so safe bet.
Oh, they look really cute.
Apart from that.
Yeah, I Googled it.
How did you Google it?
Oh, they also come as Freddo frogs.
Oh, wait, everyone, you said the size of the palm, and I was looking like, that's massive. But yeah, they're Freddo.
Probably a little bit smaller than that. But yeah. We have Freddo frogs, so it's that same sort of,
I don't know, it's the same company thing.
Yeah.
He looks shifty. I don't know. He's up to something. He's up to some mischief.
I haven't had one for a long time, so I don't know what the updated 2021 version looks like, but I remember the one from the early 2000s. Oh, mate, it can be whatever you want.
Pink shame the koala, man.
AAA Disney rules.
So okay. Frozen.
So Frozen. We're still very much at the beginning, I think. So.
Yeah, I think
this episode's pretty front loaded. Like, as soon as they like get into the wilderness, it
it moves along. Yeah,
kind of like slow down a little.
One thing I was thinking about when I was listening to this episode, compared to the first. So this is the fifth one, isn't it? This, so compared to the first four, everyone seems to be vibing off each other a lot more. Like, the jokes seem to be coming a lot more all the time. Like, everyone seems to be firing on all cylinders. Like, everyone seems a lot more comfortable. Everyone seems like they know what they're doing a bit more.
No, but I had made the same note already. As well. They seem to really be sinking into, like, a lot more comfortability.
They're more in the zone. Yeah, they're definitely, they know a bit more what they're doing, and they're not, like, looking at Paolo for, like, answers, like, oh, no, can we do this? Can we do that? Like, what's this mean?
Yeah, they do a lot more of their own problem solving, I feel like, in this one, rather than, like you said, rather than saying, like, can I do this or can I do that? They just kind of say, I'm doing this, and, you know, John just kind of has to field it and tell them, you know, what to roll to accomplish that. Yeah,
I love John as DM, because he's just so fun.
Yeah, he's super unforgiving.
He's such a hard ass.
He's a lot more comfortable with telling people about what Apollo is.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. He's just like, no, I'm going to shut that down right now.
But then at the same time, he's also much more comfortable with freestyling up, you know, mechanics or things, or even just single roles. I mean, that's how they ended up with the idea of the decoy feast. Is Peter just jokingly said, can we roll to see if they had another feast prepared? And he's just like, you know what? Yes, we can. And he just did it. So it's a weird combination of being like much more... I don't want to say harsh, but
John's got a lot more GURPS knowledge than anyone I think on the show, doesn't he? Yeah, he's been playing obviously for a very long time.
Shows. It's very nice.
Oh, so he's probably
definitely.
It's refreshing. That is a dense don't get me book. Wrong. Like, Paolo is great, but it's refreshing to have somebody else come in and give their spin on it. So
that's very deep with knowledge of everything, and it's so funny when John's going on a rant or something, and he's just like, I know I can do this, and then I'll add this onto it, and I'll do this, and all this, and then I'll only roll for this. Right. Yeah. And then that'll work.
I think that based on different things that they've said, I think they're also probably more comfortable with John as the GM because of previous games that they've played where he was GMing in, like, I guess they played D&D or other systems. But it sounds like he was their GM rather than Paolo.
Yeah, I get that.
And there's probably a comfort level to that as well.
Yes. Oh, interesting.
I get that. I can see them having done a lot of practice games of different films beforehand, and then obviously just ended up with Paolo as...
Yeah, we wondered that. We've talked about that in one of the other episodes, whether we thought they had done several practice movies before they started recording.
Hey guys, Anita here breaking in after the fact. Sometimes you can cut a whole section and nobody will notice because conversations move on and topics change, but right here is where I edited out a bit that went nowhere and seamlessness was impossible. So let me just hang this lampshade right here and back in.
I did love, and Peter points this out, I did love how much of the whole intro chunk of this was just savoir-faire roll after savoir-faire roll. It was a really, like,
true.
A different set of... I mean, I think they use a lot more... they use a lot more social skills in this play than they did in, I think, any of the previous ones. A lot of the other ones were, you know... I mean, Raiders was a lot less social skills, more adventuring stuff, and same for Back to the Future, too. They definitely lean more on the soft skills.
Obviously, we've got royalty in this episode, so it's obviously the royal essence, and obviously how you should act in each social situation, and they had to obviously play into that with how obviously they interacted with the other people.
In saying that, in keeping with that, but like to the opposite side, I love that, like, one of Paolo's only quirks is that he generally lives in the woods.
I feel like that John immediately justifies it by going, oh, it was in the song.
It was on.
Like,
I mean, for someone who doesn't want to let them sing, he relies a lot on the songs to inform his character sheet choices.
They're full of great information.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, these are character sheets I would love to see.
And their resistance to sing Can We to Build a Snowman
is
really incredible.
I would have loved it.
Paolo was just like, he's just like prodding Peter the whole time to start singing, and he just doesn't want to. He's like, oh, you know,
you want to, like, release your stress, like, you know.
I was, speaking of Paolo, I was surprised that he was so shocked about, like, the LGBT community having kind of adopted Elsa. Like, when Peter just kind of mentioned that, he was very shocked, and I was kind of surprised by that. I thought that was a pretty well-known, like, trope about the movie.
Concealed, don't feel. It was very, very heavy.
Yeah,
I think yeah, so. Yeah.
LGBT.
It was, I mean, more just so surprised that Paolo had not thought about that, really.
Yeah, even I, who have not seen the movie, I was aware of that, so.
It still upsets me that you haven't watched Frozen.
We have to talk about that because in this episode, they mention specifically the idea that there are people who have not seen movies that they've done and they wanted to know about that.
At least 60% of the movies they've done, I have not watched or yet watched. Like, I don't know why it seems to be so.
Well, when
yes,
did everyone?
I think I'm probably around like 80% of the movies that we have actually covered on Fancast so far, I have not seen. So,
oh my god.
Oh my.
I've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark. After that, it all just kind of goes downhill.
Huh. Yeah, wow. I guess I've only seen Raiders and Frozen. I have not seen Labyrinth or Back to the Future 2, but.
Same here with those ones.
Also the same, yeah.
Huh.
The only one I haven't seen is Labyrinth. When did you all watch Frozen then? When was your first experience with Frozen?
A couple months after it came out, probably. Like, it wasn't a thing I watched in theaters.
Yeah, mine was quite a few years after it came out. It was one day while I was at home with my parents, and they had it on, but I was only half watching, and then I had to watch it afterwards because it was an absolute hoot.
Yeah. You know what? It was because it came out in 2013, and I never saw it, and then my daughter was born in 2015, and so I think I saw it sometime around 2015 or 2016. So around the time they were doing this episode was the first time I ever saw it.
Frozen was written by Chris Buck, Jennifer Lee, and Shane Morris, and inspired by the Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale under the name The Snow Queen. The original story bears only a slight resemblance to the final product. In The Snow Queen, a young girl named Gerda goes on an adventure to find her friend Kai, whose heart and eye have been struck by pieces of a troll's mirror. The troll's mirror shards cause his heart and mind to become cold, and he is then kidnapped by, or follows, depending on the translation, the Snow Queen. Gerda's journey is reminiscent of the Odyssey in many ways, as she has to overcome many hurdles to find her friend. The story ends after she melts his cold heart and frees him from the Snow Queen. Disney had been working on an adaptation of the fairy tale off and on since the 1940s, being initially put on hold during World War II while Disney produced U.S. propaganda. There were a number of attempts afterwards, but Frozen as we know it didn't really start coming together until 2012. For most of the film's development, the Snow Queen was the classic evil villain. This persisted even after the team decided to make the Snow Queen's sister, Anna, the protagonist, who is reminiscent of the original protagonist, Gerda. The attitudes towards the Snow Queen, or Elsa as she is more widely known these days, came when songwriters Robert Lopez and Kristen Anderson Lopez composed Let It Go. The song reimagined their villain into a more complex and sympathetic character. From this, the Frozen we now know was born.
So what are the differences?
Yeah, right.
It's funny.
Hans is the big one.
Yeah, the
Hans
biggest one
is one of the first big ones I've seen. Love is not an open door in this
great song.
Film re-roll.
Love that
it's
song.
So fun. And they just completely bypassed it.
Yeah. Well, Anna never made it out of the castle.
No, like, she just wanted a friend. She was just like, oh, is there a girl my age?
Literally saw the first person.
Grab Miriam.
And immediately kidnapped her.
And then, like, 5 minutes later, said the quote, I should have grabbed a better friend.
Yes.
Poor Miriam.
Which is...
Poor Miriam.
It sort of plays similar to the film, though. They sort of go in the same direction as the film, but there's a few little changes.
In the middle
like,
is the
Hans,
bigger change.
It's probably the main change.
They hit all of the act points that they need to.
Like, yeah, I guess John still sets up.
Running away.
Yeah, yeah.
Confrontation on the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hans still ends up being essentially the bad guy, just in a more overt way from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not from the get-go.
Definitely not
instead of being a creep and trying to marry Anna, he just goes,
he never got set up.
I'm going to go kill her instead.
Yeah, we never really interacted with the Duke of Weselton very much for him to be the fake-out bad guy. So it was pretty much just like, Hans is kind of a dick.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't get that like really wonderful twist in the movie from Hans. Like that was such like I knew something bad was going to happen in the movie, but like that the specific line he says is really mean. Like,
oh yeah, he's a very menacing.
I love that John says the way John or Peter the way that they picked it was because he says I've got 12 other brothers. He's like, no one's grown up without that many complexes.
Very much so.
Or he's like, And the other one's like, can I tell you something crazy? He's like, I love crazy. No one loves crazy.
It is. It's funny. I mean, but they do. In the actual movie, they do it quite well. If you're not like really paying too much attention, which, you know, I don't know, 5 minutes into the movie, you're probably not paying that close of attention. You know, on rewatching, it's super obvious, especially for those reasons. Mm. But I think, I mean, the first time I watched it, I fell in love with Hans.
First watch through, I fell in love with Hans and then felt betrayed.
Yeah. He steps up. He wants to help.
By the way.
Yes.
Anita, just trust Hans the first time we watch this film, by the way. Yeah. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Got it.
You have no reason to doubt him.
He is the good guy that rescues the princesses. Okay. The basic
understanding. Everything you say is spoilers for you.
The sequel is about their like wonderful, loving relationship, and their marriage is going great.
And their kids as well.
Yep.
Lovely. It's a lot like Cinderella then.
Yeah,
it's such a positive spin on.
It's just a Norse retelling of Cinderella. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. No, I'm aware of Frozen, guys. I'm not completely.
You're not immune to so.
I haven't been yelling at people. No spoilers for this many years.
One of the other big changes is there's no Olaf in this. They never.
Yes, that's one of my big notes is no Olaf, and I really towards one of the, I think I remember it's part three and they're building snowman. I really hoped
they were going to sneak him in that way,
but nope. A film without the comedic relief character. No Josh Gad.
Well, Anna just becomes the comedic relief character by her constant crit fails.
Yes, she does.
But yeah, no Olaf. You know, we never get the fake out with Hans. He's just a guy, and then later he's mean.
But we do get two lovely new characters in the forms of Bors. We'll go three. We get Miriam Bors and his horse.
Oh, I think you're going to say the horse for Bors character.
Ride for the
fjords. Where did the horse end up?
Of course.
Oh, he ran back to the castle.
Oh, good. Okay.
We don't know if he made it, but like he ran off towards the castle.
I believe they confirmed that Bors died.
I believe in Bors' horse. Bors' horse definitely made it back to the castle.
See, the Ice Centurion, I just sort of put it hand in hand with Marshmallow. That's very much I know they're very different, obviously, ice swords for hands, which is absolutely a lovely image that I needed.
It's amazing how often people forgot that he had ice swords for hands and how Peter had to remind people, he has ice swords for hands!
There are so many... I mean, we're getting into, like, episode two of Frozen, but there are so many moments where, like, he is just... Peter is... I mean, obviously, we've talked about this. He's always frustrated, but he's so frustrated by people not, like, understanding basic things... Mostly Jaws.
Jaws definitely says later, I think in episode three of this one, where it would, like, and so the pendulum swings because she's either I'm four or she's severing the spinal column.
Yeah.
There's kind of no middle.
And it's both.
She doesn't need a middle ground.
Exactly. She doesn't have to, like, she wasn't like the antagonist of this movie because Anna's character, she just built to be the antagonist of the movie, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's definitely, I mean, she's the one that caused the fright check, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm.
She's the one that caused the fright check to send Elsa away. Is this the first time that one of Peter's characters goes off to practice their Winkish dialect, or is this just really, really baked into the movie?
It's pretty baked into the movie. It's presented in such a way that the only place Elsa feels she can go that's safe is up on the mountain.
Into her crit success castle.
Yeah, in the movie, yeah.
Yeah, in the movie. Definitely not here, but that's perfect. Yeah,
success by one.
Architecture will be a big part of discussion.
Speaking of, I know we usually go through for like things that are firsts that get joked about a lot going forward. One of the ones that I caught, it's not quite there, but it's very close. After he does roll singing to sing Let It Go, he succeeds by one.
Yes.
And he kind of just makes the cell phone of like, that feels really appropriate for my entire musical theater career. And I think it's the closest thing to a first, you know, the Peter Strait story kind of thing we get. It doesn't quite become a trope until later, but it's the first time that he makes that kind of joke about, like, you know, success by one or failure by one being, like, very in character for him as a person.
Yes, definitely.
I'm surprised with how well they resisted singing, considering that, like, we find out in Aladdin that Paulo can sing really well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe he resisted singing any of the songs.
See, to start with, I didn't know whether they were worried about, obviously, parody rules and all that, and how much they could get away with singing.
Yeah.
And Disney cracks down hard on
they really do.
Anything. And this, the big worry I had was that they were going to just suddenly burst into all of the lines of Let It Go and just be like, yeah, you got to take that episode down.
Yeah. I know they mention, Pella mentions in a future episode, some character starts singing something and he tells them to stop. He's like, no, we can't use copyrighted music. But I think this was
That's
more
true.
Just
there's
John.
There's a limit that you can do that with to be like a parody account or whatever, mm-hmm. or like you're reviewing something. So
5 seconds or something.
Yeah.
It's pretty small.
It's
yeah.
very small. Usually enough to get the idea across.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this one was more just John not wanting them to sing.
But also all of the
I know,
all
I couldn't quite tell.
Sorry, all of the slow punts into Let It Go and trying to set him up. But he'd only watched the movie once the day before. So,
yeah.
And the fact he had no sort of touchstones to bounce off was, it just made it a bit more real. When
and then he finally did sing it and immediately forgot the words.
In a beautiful operatic rendition.
Yeah, it was basically, it was Sala sings Let It Go.
Let it
I can't
go.
Think all of that.
I love it so much. He's right, though. Singing in a faux operatic mm-hmm. tone really is very satisfying.
Yes. 100%.
It is so much fun.
I love that at the start of the episode, everyone's saying
yeah.
Anna instead of Anna.
I think everybody at some point gets corrected.
Because
everybody corrects somebody else and everybody gets corrected on Anna.
I was at the beginning of this recording, so
spoiler. We had to learn how to spell it.
Yeah. Is it a spoiler if it already happened?
True.
I'm sure someone's listening to this backwards. I don't know who they are or why, but
someone's
someone
gonna
has a
these.
Really amazing.
You might want to
just doing this from.
You never know.
Oh, no. I would never do that to myself. Spoiler alert for the Memento episodes we eventually do. I am not doing that.
We'll listen to those in the correct order.
You're 100% going to do them backwards.
Forwards in time. That's what I'm going to do. We're going to start with Memento.
We can get the downloads and we'll just do a super cut and put it in the right order.
I'm hoping someone else will do that for me.
I can sort that if needs be.
Okay.
That's still many, many years to go.
I was just going to subtly get us back on Frozen.
We're not doing subtly.
Yeah, no,
let's just do it.
Another key difference I noticed was...
Back to Frozen.
Kristoff falls in love with the Ice Queen, which makes so much sense, actually. His quotes of, like, I work in ice.
I'm hoping there might be a job.
It's still well with him, like, liking the person who makes ice.
It makes a lot of sense. You're right.
And
does
that actually is
in the movie.
That's a very big difference.
He meets it differently, and obviously all the act points are hit differently. And he obviously meets Anna before.
Anna hires him to take her up the mountain after they meet.
Where she gets all of the appropriate equipment.
Yeah, but this is definitely a big place where it diverges from the movie. Is you get Kristoff seeing Elsa before Anna and falling in love, and then also the first time he meets Anna, she has stolen his bedroll from him. So it really makes it hard to get back on the track of like the Kristoff and Anna train.
Wow. I don't know if I want to watch the movie anymore now.
You should watch the movie.
Just for the music. Really.
The Rock Trolls have such a good song.
Okay.
And they have very distinct voices, unlike John's version of them.
I love Crazy Aunt Sheila. That is my favorite character in this.
MVP of all Frozen songs.
For real.
I was just looking through my notes before. It's the very last note I made. It was Peter's quote, and he's like, when they're talking about when they were digging through the ice wall, and then that's right, yeah, they're talking about that when they're going through the hole in the wall, and he's like, don't you talk to me about war songs.
Oh, God.
There was so much sexual innuendo jokes in this whole episode.
I can see the side eye when
he's talking about the connection.
So these are the times when you really want the camera recording.
Especially with like how often they reference each other making like pantomiming these actions,
mm-hmm.
and then just like criticizing each other. Like, we're doing a podcast. You don't need to pantomime these things.
Audio medium, guys. Audio medium.
especially a lot later in the show, Peter is always like, oh, you know, he's like, just for the listener, Paolo just made this face of complete wonder and awe, and it almost makes it you feel like you're there. You're like, oh, yeah, I can see that now. It puts me in the seat in the room with them.
I think another, like, really good moment, like, they really, like, laid into, I think it was John who had, like, who's, like, I think he had this quote, like, I don't have enough pockets for all these phones.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, his phone went off, and then it put two out, and it's like, Mr. Big Guy.
I don't have enough money for all these pockets. No, it's the other one. I have enough pockets.
I don't have enough money
for all my pockets.
I was wondering if you were going to catch yourself on that or not. I was agreeing with you. Like, me too.
Yeah, I'm still on my second cup of tea, so I need about four more. Drinking the film reroll tea, actually, that you can find that one of the Redditors made.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it's so good.
Can you really? We'll explain.
I don't. Oh, I feel really bad because I don't remember the name of the Redditor who created this tea. But they created
it. I bet they love this podcast.
I know. They've got to, right? And they're going to really love me not remembering their name. But
you could edit it in. I believe in you.
I don't.
It just has to be in. It's just like, I think the name is, and then it's clearly just a sound bite you've taken in like post editing, and you just dropped it in there.
It's just Jack doing your voice.
I think the name is Big Jack.
Oh, that's gotta go in.
But this person created a group of tea blends on adagio.com.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
And you can probably find it in the UK at .co.uk or whatever. You can create on their site, you can create various tea blends yourself. And there's a whole section for fandoms. And somebody,
Sir Parzival,
created like five or six different tea blends, and I'm drinking like the film reroll version of it, which is like happened to be all my favorite
flavors.
Like,
and this person there's film reroll, and then he's got all of the different universities from Goonies: Pear Tree, Meadow Brush, Sweet Plum, Oak Root, Willow Wing, and then there's also Coffee and Cognac.
Oh, that's really cool.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, wow. The film reroll one is really, really good. That I can tell you. And it smells amazing. Like, if it didn't taste good, I would just set it out as potpourri, but it tastes amazing.
You should definitely, when you post this episode, you should definitely like have it as a link when you post it there so everyone can go check it out.
Absolutely, I'm going to make a note
really
of
cool.
that right now.
Would I be alone in saying that I don't like tea?
Oh, you're not alone, don't worry.
Am I alone?
I'm breaking every British stereotype. I don't drink tea. I don't drink coffee either. I'm a heathen in this country.
Oh my god!
What do you drink?
Cold drinks
for caffeine.
Coke if I want beer.
Oh,
Coca-Cola. Yes.
Okay, as long as it's not Pepsi, that's fine.
We just got real pets in the air.
The Phil Reroll fancast. Not the Pepsi H-cast.
I wouldn't accept a Pepsi sponsorship if they offered.
I would. Money is money.
Take that money and run with it.
Yeah, 100%.
I can lie and say I like Pepsi.
I could probably, I don't know if I could lie. I don't know how to do it. Do you remember when they did the Pepsi challenges? Or
are you guys
far too young for that?
No, I don't know.
Was that like the blind taste test?
Yeah, it's like a blind taste test. They did once upon a time.
They had new Pepsi or Pepsi Clear?
No, before that.
Oh, gosh.
It was just a Pepsi. I was a kid. It was the Pepsi challenge, and they had people stationed at all these various grocery stores across the country, and they would hand you a little cup of soda, taste one and then the other one to compare, and you tell them which one you liked. And I picked Coke, and the lady was not pleased with me. So
it's like heavy subtext of like, which one do you like? It's this one, right?
Yeah.
That still happens over here. Pepsi loses a lot to like Aldi and Lidl own brands. They're like a big budget supermarkets over here, and they lose out all the time. Pepsi does.
Oh, sure. Well, it's different there. Like, you guys don't have as much sugar kind of in your general diet as we do, I think.
The sugar that the Americans do.
Yeah.
The
Americans really have a massive sugar, like, sweet tooth.
Once COVID is over and I can eventually have my holiday to Florida, I'm not looking forward to my sugar rush the moment I bite into everything I want to try.
Yeah, we add sugar to everything, for sure.
Yeah, even stuff that's not supposed to be sweet, and then we just balance it out with more salt so you don't taste how sweet it is.
Right.
And that way you get addicted to snack foods.
Right, I add sugar to my spaghetti sauce, so. that's to balance normal. The bitterness of the tomato paste.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, that needs to be explained. I'm lost now.
Oh. Sure, there are other ways to do that.
There are many ways to make this happen. Like, my spaghetti sauce, I got handed down to my mom, and that was handed down to her by Betty Crocker. So it's
just loving
the Dame of Sugar.
It's just like a meat sauce, you know, ground beef, and then you add in like a couple cans of tomato sauce and one tiny, like small little 6 ounce can of tomato paste. And because that is so bitter, the tomato paste itself is, you add just a little tiny bit of sugar.
Wow.
To balance that out. You can also add my sister. I know. My sister adds cinnamon.
Yeah, we went.
Golly gosh, I thought it was odd, but that maybe isn't.
I can see
adding chocolate to things, but not. Oh god. Okay, I'm going to have to take a long, hard think.
You haven't gotten to the part of the recipe where we add chocolate to the sauce.
That's true. We do. You do add chocolate. You end up with a kind of chocolate. It's
like Italian mole.
There you go. Mole. That's the word I was looking for.
Chocolate. It gets bitter again, so you have to add a bit more sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you keep going back and forth. You start adding too many spices, and then you have to go, to get the balance right. Suddenly you've ended up with more sauce than you ever imagined.
And that's cooking with
just a little thing. We kept it on topic with chocolate and sweet. So.
Yeah, we're not talking about frozen anymore. It's, we're talking about chocolate.
And this is how we... I'm so happy that we got to hear the origin story of the Pepsi. And
this is a good storyline. I really like it.
It's a heartwarming tale.
I'm imagining now, like, Pepsi's on the counter frozen by Anna. And then you turn around and be like, oh, if only somebody loved you.
Oh, my goodness.
So what else happens in this movie?
That was the end. That's the ending right there.
Episode so far.
We touched on the beginning.
We've peaked now. There's no more coming.
All that's left in the middle is the architecture.
Yes, and this is our first John Miller architecture.
In this episode, we get the nice architecture terms of portico and balustrade.
Fluted columns.
Fluted columns.
In fact, I believe this episode was sponsored by Fluted Columns.
Yes.
The Institute of Fluted Columns.
Was it Annulus? Amulus? What was it?
That's in episode two. Yeah, they do Annulus.
Yeah.
Annulus.
They cover a lot more terms in part two.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's like...
And then they accuse John of looking it all up like in the week since the first part.
Yeah.
I looked up Annulus as it relates to architecture, and I still don't understand what it is.
It's just a circular opening. It's basically just a hole.
It's a hole you didn't make by accident.
So it's just a circuit. Well, why can't we just call that a hole?
Because it's John Miller.
It's not a hole.
I think like a hole implies an accident. Like if I say, oh, there's a hole in the wall, people are like, oh God, you have to fix it. But if I say, oh, there's an annulus in the
wall. I've put an annulus.
I have more problems with there's an annulus in the wall than there's a hole in the wall.
I agree.
I'd say, hole in the wall over here is where you get your money from.
The glory hole.
Oh,
okay.
No,
glory holes are something very different.
The glorious annulus.
Oh, please.
Careful.
He's talking about ATM. Yeah. You're talking about ATM. Yeah,
it's a hole in the wall, but a glory hole is something that's a different entirely podcast different altogether. Thing. That's the film Reroll Fancast After Dark.
For our listeners under 18.
Yeah, that's for our OnlyFans.
Subscribe now on Patreon to find
out. Yeah, you're gonna have to put
the 18 plus for
it. You have to slap a R18 version on this on this episode, I think now. We've gone too far. We've talked about portholes, glory holes.
Those crevices.
Those dirty, dirty koalas. We talked about everything.
Okay, you guys have made a very good case for that.
Oh, butcher.
We're just giving the people what they want.
Horseholes.
Annulus.
Annulus content.
Is this what they want? I was trying to count the amount of, I don't know if you did it earlier, but the amount of crit successes and crit fails.
There are a lot.
In the episode. And there's Well, in this episode, there was Peter crit succeeds his cyber warfare role at the start, but I don't think John asked him to do it because he drops a die off the table, I think, and he rolls it and gets like the last bit.
Yeah, I think.
I think he says that they get a crit success there. Then Jaws, obviously, fails on getting a dex roll because she just fails, so it's automatic crit fails on the drapes. And then the only other one I counted was Boar's crit success on the cave where you're just like,
that's right.
And
Boar's the whole MVP. Thing just
breaks open.
Maybe rest in peace.
That's the only three I've got.
They've added in luck checks, and they had a lot of luck checks over these three episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
luck saved them a lot of times.
They had to really go heavy on the luck, because every single Disney film is just constant luck checks, and they get horrifically lucky.
They do, and there's what did he put on a sheet? Like three lucks
and two serendipity,
and serendipity. Yeah,
that's how they found the cave.
Yeah,
that didn't work out for Boris. That didn't help him out at all.
No, it did not. It made him very easy to forget.
But it got Anna to her location.
It made it easier for Anna to assume, oh, Boris is fine, he's in a cave. She would have felt bad otherwise. It saved her from regret.
Yeah, until episode 3 when they ask what happened to Boris, and I think John rolls for it and he's dead.
Guilt by forgetting, I think.
She did her best.
Yeah, and he wouldn't have been quite smart enough to remember or to think to, like, not do what his princess, like, he wouldn't think to save himself. He would do exactly what he was ordered by his princess, which was to stay there.
Yeah, he was explicitly not very smart.
Yeah.
That was nice of her.
Murder by forget.
A lot of things happened.
I love that John the whole time when she was asking who's the biggest, who's the best I can take. And she's like, who's the biggest? And John's like, oh, you know, he's a big oaf and he's slow and he's big and all this. And he's like really trying to push him not to take him.
Yeah, I think he was like, trying to get her to anyway. Take like Hans's body.
Like, all right.
Yeah.
I think he was trying to get her to take Hans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He might have died in that cave.
That would have been a really weird twist if he'd have gone up, and it would have might have changed the story quite a lot, because she might have been able to mellow Hans or make him really angry.
Yeah, yeah.
True.
The complete opposite side of love is not an open door.
I think that Jaws made the right decision, though.
Yes.
I mean, the only other person who's kept their wits about them should definitely stay.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I mean, almost exactly what happens in the movie. I mean, they've fallen in love at this point, but he also right away seems to know exactly what to do about everybody being frozen. So, I mean, it's the same kind of thing. Like, he's just the only person other than her who's just like, here's what we need to do, and let's do it.
And for all his faults, he did want to help the kingdom. Okay, he wanted to take it over. But that's an entirely separate issue. And that's Weaselton getting involved. I'm sorry, Weaselton.
It's actually Weaselton, yeah.
Yeah, like Hans is very good at constructing pyres as well, you know? It's just one of his hidden talents.
Yeah,
roll
really
for
good pies. Good at big fires.
Not super good at directing people how to get rid of rock trolls. You know, fire maybe not the best idea, but you know, Hans is trying his best.
He's doing it. I think he did a great job. You know, he's trying to protect the castle or the kingdom from an ice witch. Especially in this version, in their version, a lot of what he does makes more sense. I mean, we never really get his perspective of like he had always planned on trying to take over the kingdom, but it seems this the way that he was introduced in the reroll was much more it weirdly justified his desire to help and then kind of take over and protect them from this horrible witch.
It was justified. Well, I say justified, that's a very strong word.
Not quite.
A man like him
slightly more justified than in the movie.
I mean, if we give him the benefit of the doubt when he arrives, you know, he sees someone, Elsa specifically, but you know, he sees someone like literally create winter and freezes the people of Elsinore and run away.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's very startling, that's a very terrible thing, you know? Like, she doesn't mean to do it, and we get, you know, we have her side of the story, but, like, you know, that's a terrifying thing.
He's literally only seen her explode in ice and possibly kill a lot of her denizens.
Yeah.
Right. So from his perspective, I could see for sure, you know, a good motivation for, you know, trying to help the kingdom and get rid of this terrifying thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And most of it just because we never meet him. We don't spend much time with him to see his inner monologue. You know, it could be that in this version, he didn't show up to usurp. He was just there. And then
for the coronation, obviously, all the kingdoms were there for the coronation. So mm-hmm. it makes sense that he was there for genuine reasons rather than promiscuous and creepy like the movie.
Yeah, he just wanted to get rid of. He just wanted to get away from his 12 other siblings.
Do you blame him?
Absolutely, but also like the youngest of 13 brothers is the one that his kingdom sent.
I was like, just thinking that.
Low on the pecking order.
Like
right?
That is like those two kingdoms must not get along. Like, here, take the one who really likes burning witches.
Right. Have they already Disney married off the other 12 to other kingdoms?
That's what I'm thinking of. See, if we look at Disney, there every single bit of land is a kingdom. They've probably all been married off to all the other. Or maybe his brothers are all the other Disney princes.
His brother is Prince Charming, for sure.
Oh, yes.
Is this the Disney multiverse here? And just...
Well, they're all connected, aren't they? It's one of the big things of obviously.
Really?
That's Pixar. Yeah. I think the Pixar ones are all connected. I don't know Disney ones, are they?
Nothing big. Maybe it's just in my head. My head canon is they're all connected.
There's definitely nods here and there in Disney movies to other movies, but I think Pixar explicitly all takes place in the same universe.
Yes.
There's there's like the big Pixar theory one. Yeah. There's like a poem inside about it. It goes right into
Big Hero 6. Oh no, Wreck-It Ralph, sorry, wrong one. Wreck-It Ralph 2 is one of the princesses.
Yeah.
And that sort of drags it in.
These are things I did not know. No, I haven't seen Wreck-It Ralph 2 either.
I haven't seen any of them yet.
I've seen the first one. The first one's lovely.
The first one is fun.
I feel like we should group watch Frozen and just leave it recording in the background.
Ooh.
On Disney Plus, do a group watch and have all of the thoughts and opinions spew out as a bonus episode. We could group watch all the movies that they do and then have the recording going and it just be like the worst commentary ever.
Yeah, the worst kind of Mystery Science 2000.
The group watch of Speed will be much longer than the film reroll.
Yeah.
Sorry.
To talk about with Frozen, though, since we're breaking this up by episode.
We've covered, obviously, the beginning, all the chocolate gate, drape gate, Hans gate, Elsa running off.
Have we established, what the princess ages are?
They talk about it, they assume that Elsa is 18, because she's coming of age to be coronated, which would then put Anna at 15 or 16.
See, I think they have canonical ages.
Do they?
I thought they were younger, because Disney doesn't seem to care about ages. So Anna is 16. No, Anna is 18 and Elsa is 21.
Really?
According to...
And Hans is 23, which makes him even creepier that he was trying to get on Anna.
Kristoff is 21.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And Kristoff is 21, which is older than I would have thought.
Yeah.
I'm surprised with that. And you're right, it is. They are older than most Disney princesses are generally portrayed as.
They are.
But they look younger. It's one of those... But definitely, Jaws played Anna much younger than...
I think she definitely played Anna as though she was 15 or 16.
And so incredibly sheltered.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Not left.
I take wink as a sign of respect, so I wink.
Jeez. And I think Peter played Elsa as much older, almost. She seemed like she was very curmudgeonly and shut off from
I wish they'd have not skipped the intro bit. Do you want to build a snowman and how they'd interacted as kids, because obviously Elsa locks herself away from her parents dying to then she's completely locked away, but I feel this version has so much more knowledge of the world, either she's just been studying and that's how Peter wanted to play her,
right?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, I think I get why they skipped that intro, but I think it's just like we mentioned before, I mean, John set up the character sheets to really feed each other with the failed dex checks and then fright checks. So I think it was kind of a way of just like, it would be fun to play at the beginning and see if that changes things, but it would also potentially take away the adult kids if the events didn't happen, being frozen. I feel like
they would definitely have derailed anything coming later and Kristoff wouldn't exist because, everybody got along fine. Like if there was a role for the parents to just, accept Elsa for who she was.
Or just a roll if they die.
It'd be interesting. Because obviously they go off on the boat, don't they? And they die at sea.
I think later on in the show, Paolo, he says that he starts every film the same way, and he rolls to see if the initial event happens, and early on a crit fail, he'll change.
Yeah, but
narrative.
I think they mentioned that in Jaws like, the first time.
He says, because like when Chrissy dies at the start, he's like, if it was only a crit fail, she wouldn't die, and something else would happen to kick the plot along. But otherwise, most of the movies start the same way, but there is that slim possibility.
Yeah,
that
as we see with
which
Steve,
is pretty cool,
there's...
which is a respect to...
The one I remember is the Wizard of Oz, where like he rolls to see if the house lands and kills the witch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh right.
I think it's just a testament to how good Paolo is as a GM and just his creative ways and what he's able to do and like just change things on the fly and be comfortable with it. I think and the planning and everything. Yeah, I think it's
John as well is very good at taking those yes and moments, like having a decoy feast and all that. But I really do also like the way that John says no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's also really good at keeping people on track.
Yeah,
without it feeling too much like railroading.
Yeah, he definitely like shuts shit down when it doesn't need to happen. I think it's especially in this one, a testament
to how he wrote the character sheets because he wrote it in such a way that like the way this is going to go is almost exactly like the movie. Like Anna's going to mess something up, it's going to freak out Elsa, and she's going to bolt.
They were really well crafted. Like they were built exactly for that way. Like Elsa's character sheet is designed for her to like have a downward emotional spiral.
Yeah,
100%. I'm just going through my notes. There is one bit, obviously, when they were doing the scepter and stuff and that sort of bits for the coronation, and they were having the long debate about the what religion they are.
Right.
And obviously, now with Frozen 2 is out, it's very much pagan druidic rather than Christianity or Catholicism or whatever they go down the idea of. And it's interesting, obviously, we've now got the future knowledge of Frozen 2 and all the lore that brings in.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be really interesting to see if they were to obviously do their own Frozen 2 and obviously would they follow similar plot points, because the characters are in the same place at the end of this as they are in the film.
It's a rare reroll where they end in a place that's suitable for the canon sequel.
Is it though? I mean, we don't need to get too far into it because that's, you know, episode
part 3. Yeah.
There's some significant changes in their perception among the community by the end of the reroll rather than the movie.
That is true.
Yes. So sort of location of where they are.
Yeah, location-wise, certainly.
Yeah.
I'll have another, yeah, it'd be interesting if we'll be able to do part 3, obviously. We'll all re-listen to it. That'd be a nice ending touch point of where could they go? Because there's so many directions these sort of films could go. And obviously all of the film rerolls that have potential for sequels.
There's so many of them. There's so many that like have replays as well.
What will be the first
sequel?
Halloween 2. Anybody?
Yeah.
That's the confirmed one. Yeah.
That's really the only one.
Yeah.
They've talked about doing Jumanji 2. They've talked about. I feel like there's a few other ones.
I want Jumanji 2 so badly.
I know. We're definitely waiting for Halloween 3.
Yeah, Halloween 3. Aliens was one I know that they threw out the idea that Aliens was going to be John DMing.
I don't know if they said.
At the end of Rogue One, they set it up for sequel. Paolo do something at the end of
Rogue
One.
Because they
finished
it,
and he's like, because she leaves at the end. Yeah, and he's like, and he does his own little thing at the end. I was like, oh, that's a really cool like sequel bait.
I feel like we'll never get that in a long time. Like, I'd love to go back to Phantom Menace and see how badly that goes.
Yeah, and so
and
they talked about what
create
they would
their
do
own,
with that.
Create their own universe.
Yeah. Well, I think in Rogue One, they talked about that, the idea of doing that, and whether they would start at the beginning and just see how it goes, or if they would do each one as its own standalone and kind of like start from the canon of the movie in episode 2 and just kind of go from there, or do it all as one contiguous thing.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting way of doing it. And also, obviously, they've done the small sort of one-shots at the end of some episodes. So we've had Iron Man 3, where they've done the president scene, and they've done Doctor Who, they've done the end of The Impossible Astronaut, or Day of the Moon, one of them. And I'd love to see them carry those on. Because Doctor Who is perfect format for the craziness of film reroll. And okay, yes, obviously there is a whole role-playing game for Doctor Who, but the way they did it, they could just carry it on with that sort of, like, it just worked so well. And I'd love to see sequels to the minisodes that they've done.
Yeah, it would be really interesting to see as well sequels to stuff like if they did Blade Runner, if they came back and did Blade Runner 2049 or whatever the sequel was.
Yes, 2049.
That would be an interesting. And Pirates of the Caribbean, they're certainly set up to do any of those.
Oh yeah, that would be an easy one to like jump back into.
Mm-hmm. I think the problem with doing too many sequels, and you could even see it with Halloween 2, is like it very quickly doesn't become a reroll anymore. It just becomes its own little adventure campaign where they're fully just doing whatever.
They're just playing in the sequel rather than playing in the moment.
Which I'm honestly fine with. It's super fun. But I think that's probably the biggest...
It's content.
It's probably the biggest reason why they don't do very many direct sequels in the universe they've already created.
Yeah, I think it's because if you want to do the sequel ones, sometimes it's either their version has to end very similar in the same way, or there has to be a real big time jump between the sequel of the movies. Like the Blade Runner one, that was a big time jump, wasn't it, between the two films? Like, I think in that time, it probably wouldn't matter as much what happened in between, because then you could just start the next one with the knowledge of the past one, but there's been like 50 years or whatever in between, so it wouldn't matter as much, sort of. Like, it's not picking up immediately after the last one, sort of, so.
Yeah, so back to Frozen. Back to back to Frozen real quick. So we've learned that Frozen 2 establishes that they are pagan, but where are they? Because I'm pretty sure that Peter's wrong that it's Denmark.
Really? I agree with him.
I thought it was based on Scandinavian Norway fjords.
Yeah, it's just sort of a vaguely that area.
Well, I mean, Denmark, correct me if I'm wrong, but Denmark is famously very flat, is it not? Like, there's no mountains in Denmark.
Huh.
I couldn't answer that question.
I could not tell you. I did not do well in geography.
Okay.
No, I just said more Norway. I just said way more Norway than Denmark.
Could be, yeah. I mean, I'm looking at pictures of Denmark, and at least some of the major cities are right on the water with lots of, kind of fjords and stuff. There is a lot of that.
In the making of Frozen 2, they go to Norway and Sweden, and they take a lot of their establishing shots based off the sort of real-life glaciers. And
yeah, Norway is probably a more accurate geological profile, I suppose.
But Denmark's not far off.
Denmark. If you just Google search Denmark mountains, there's some images that look very much like the areas around Arendelle. Some mountains, some green, some snow.
Obviously in the first movie, we only see, sort of Arendelle town, city scape, and then the mountain. And obviously it's only once we get into the sequel that we start to see, we go further out and into the other lands, which is much more Denmark. It's much more flat and forested.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking. There's a list of hills and mountains in Denmark on Wikipedia, and it looks like there's only hills. The highest peak is fairly low.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of just an amalgam of that whole Nordic area.
Scandinavian.
Yeah.
I mean, being Scandinavia, yeah. But definitely if we were trying to locate them in a country, I think it's probably more Norway than Denmark.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair... I think that's a fair assessment.
We should let Peter know.
Yeah.
We should.
Tweet him
he'll listen to the episode. It's all good.
Yeah, we'll
we should get back to him and tell him he's wrong.
We'll at him on Twitter with the episode link and be like, here's your timestamp.
Hey,
I'll on Twitch and I'll tell him that we've decided that he's wrong.
It took 5 years from when you recorded the episode.
Do that.
Yeah, so Peter, remember 5 years ago when you got that wrong? Dumb.
Oh, I'm sure he would love that. That would work really well for his self esteem and his.
Yeah.
Save a guest spot for them.
Imagine if one of them got a guest spot on this and they could tell us more about it. Like, if one of them came on here and we were talking about it and they told us something.
And they guest us like you do.
That'd be amazing.
Show up in the middle of the episode. Just start sending them the link to the Zencaster and maybe one of them will show up.
Yeah. Here's our recording time.
I feel like if anybody, we could probably get Peter.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that might be true, yeah.
And it feels like he might just pop in.
Oh, God. Don't even.
I think Paolo, if he could, and if Kios wasn't. I think any of them, they're all lovely.
They are all just a great bunch of people. It's just
the chemistry and the
absolutely
the vibing that they have. It's just exquisite.
Yeah. Does anybody have any other Frozen? Like I'm at the end of my notes on Frozen episode one.
Part one. I'm at the end of my notes.
Yeah, I've got no more notes either.
Took more notes than that, but you guys might be out of. Interesting conversation. I don't want
to. No, feel free.
Wow. Okay, if you got more, dang.
That's a way to word that. Okay.
No, I'm just saying, like, if you guys are kind of feeling, but I mean, I've got a lot more notes of The first question, I guess, on page like 3 of my notes. How? Well,
that's a lot more than
small paper.
I did. I didn't
it's not.
Post it.
Never mind.
It's
I,
not. It's
I
small paper.
Your
I use a I use a cute little journal. How does Sven work, or how should Sven work?
Oh, I think they did exactly right. I think like Sven talks
do,
just
though?
Only
yeah,
to
right.
yeah.
Christoph. Yeah, he's completely in Christoph's.
It's
head,
yeah. It's basically
living
just
rent
like
free.
Christoph understands what he's saying, and that's kind of it.
And just put words to him.
Yeah, he understands his needs.
That's all, I think that's
what
it has
very
to
be. Special relationship.
What he has to do to him.
That's all it has to be. And obviously,
we're getting back to horses again, I think. And
but
we're warming up to it.
Peter really did not like the explanation that John went with for how to run the game. He really hated it.
But Christoph is the voice of Sven in the movie. Like,
yeah.
John Groff does the voicing, and
oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, Christoph, like, Christoph
yeah,
speaks for Sven during the film. Like, Christoph will say something. He'll say something, and then he'll like sort of sarcastically speak as Sven back to himself.
I guess I need. I think the. I need to see this movie just to establish.
He's been spending too much.
Does anyone else hear him speaking?
No. Well, because Christoph actually says out loud the things that he assumes or knows that Sven is saying. Basically, like he has a whole voice for
Sven. The characters talk to Sven.
Yeah,
don't get
like Sven clearly understands.
Yeah, it's clearly meant to be that Sven understands English and can communicate things to Christoph with knowing looks, and Christoph says what he's saying.
Oh,
so I mean, they did
basically what they kind of did.
Yeah, I mean, John
rural.
Did
okay.
exactly like identify how that works, and it does work in movie and
the Disneyverse.
Yeah.
Wow.
Animals
okay,
talking.
Now,
only
now
one
I want to see the movie again.
Quite...
I'm going back and forth on wanting to see the movie, and then maybe I don't need to. And now I'm back
to
wanting.
You're just on a roll.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was the big one. That was the big one. And also the rhyme of the ancient Profusiber.
The what?
The rhyme of the ancient Profusiber.
Oh.
They made up a word. Remember Profusibly?
Yes, Profusibly.
It's a good word.
Oh,
it works.
Yeah.
I know. I want to come up with a definition for a profusiver.
It sounds fancy. It sounds a legitimate
it's
word.
Profuse is quite a. It's already quite a strong
like
word.
And yeah, I feel like it's related to alchemy somehow.
Because iber is obviously imbibing, sort of thing. Ibing, swallowing, and then profuse.
Like it sounds like a good name for like a skill on a GURP sheet.
True.
Profusivation.
Oh, I don't like that one.
I couldn't get that out without feeling pain. So that's going on the no-no list.
Yeah, no, that's...
Yeah, that's definitely not a way we can join.
I think we really earned that 18-plus tag on the podcast. That was it. We can always review chocolate and Pepsi.
We're just a soda review podcast now.
Very specific things, but we're very good.
And creepy Betty Crocker recipes.
It's honestly, it's not that bad, man. You gotta try it.
It's just like that, like subtle, like little defense there.
It really is. Like, it's really good. It's my favorite of. It's my favorite of all the. All the spaghetti sauces I've ever had. Maybe it's because it's the one my mom made, but...
Do you have, like, a categorical list in your head of the rank? Do you have a tier list in your head of like, pasta sauce?
I kind of do. Yeah. I do.
How many pages is that one?
Oh, it's an entire book.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, for sure.
The
but it's all in my head.
Sauce.
Nothing is ever written down on that.
I was
going to
say, is it available for purchase anywhere?
Things start moving around every so often, like as my tastes have changed over the years. So, yeah, things do kind of.
Phil Reroll like... fan cast recipe book. I can see it already. Premium Patreon content.
Right. Like Ragu. Ragu is up there, but others are lower. Newman kind of gets in there too, like some of the jarred stuff, and then. Restaurant stuff is like its own category. Yeah. It all. Yes, I am a nerd. I'm not. There's nothing about this that should be surprising.
If we ever need more content, you know, an episode comes out, pasta sauce comes open.
Good. We don't need. I say we don't need to.
That's when you know That's when you know we're scrambling for content.
Right? Like, we're talking about past sources episode. We just reference internal references to our own podcast.
This is my nightmare.
Oh no. Wait, we don't have a nickname for you yet. I think that we're okay.
I have enough. No nicknames.
You guys should totally listen to his podcast.
Yeah, it's all right.
Is it the beer one?
Yeah.
It's somewhere on the list, but unfortunately there are many more to listen to.
It's
I recommend episode 4, where he gets his nickname.
Right. Well, now I have to.
Or you can listen to any other episode.
No, it's a pretty good endorsement to that, you know?
Honestly. If you're not interested in beer, then this is the thing to listen to just to find out more about you.
Yeah, exactly. No one needs that.
Aw.
No, everybody needs that.
Everyone deserves that.
We all need to know. So, yeah, that is actually, we have reached the end of my list because you guys hit kind of everything else. The only other question I had was if Elsa's ice wall is something that could be sold on Etsy.
How well did she succeed on the ice wall? Does anyone remember that role?
Honestly, I think it was a success by one. I don't remember though.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of success by ones.
The Peter Strait story.
Yes. Peter Strait story.
I just can't wait for Scott to get till we get to the Scott episodes, because Scott Ayo is just magic.
Peter, the episode of that like podcast should be the Peter Strait story.
Yeah.
Yes. 101%. Yes.
We don't even talk about the episode. We just talk to Pierre. Yes. Just goes deep dive into his life. So it's literally the Pierre story.
Biopic, perfect.
Oh my goodness!
But then he loves the stats guy. How do the stats on when Peter goes into stories? And we can just go and snippet them all out.
Oh, this would be so! I can't wait for an Andy.
Yeah,
I can't wait till you get to an Andy either.
We're getting close.
I love Andy as well.
I know. Yeah. Okay, so that is a good section of Frozen Part 1 that we've talked about. We'll probably cover some of it in Frozen Part 2 as we move along in this. So Daniel, Steven, Big Jack, and Peter, thank you guys for joining me with this amazing discussion about horseholes and Pepsi and spaghetti. Daniel, would you like to share your Twitter handle or some other way to contact you on social media?
Sure. I'm Wet Gauntlet on literally everything. Terrible, terrible screen name, but it's too late for me to change it now. moving on from that, I'm trying to learn GURPS. I'm trying to prep some GURPS games for some film rerolls. None of my regular D&D players want to do a film reroll because they are heathens and don't understand what's good.
Oh, no.
So if anyone listening just wants to do a film reroll...
Sounds very exciting.
I think we've all gone yes.
I've got two things that I want to run. First one, Jurassic Park 3. Don't know why I picked that one, but I've got all the character sheets done. The other one is...
Oh, mate, I'll jump in on that immediately. I'm just the biggest Jurassic fan.
Oh, yeah.
Yes?
That is the movie I want to do most.
Robin Williams.
Yes.
Wow, that's a blast to the past.
Yeah, somebody would need to play the role that Robin Williams plays, which, you know, tough bit, but, you know, I believe in somebody.
Jack, do you want to share your social media?
Yeah, I don't really have a Twitter, but on Instagram, I'm just Big Jackosaurus 94. Pretty straightforward. Actually, later today, after I go to gym soon, I'm having two friends come over. I've GM'd a Fallout game. Ooh. I did a GURPS session with them before, and today they're coming back and they think they're playing Fallout, but actually I'm doing my first re-roll with them. They don't know what they're getting into, and I'm re-rolling the Blues Brothers for them.
Surprise Blues Brothers! So that's going to be fun to do.
I'll let everyone know how that goes, and if anyone wants to do it, any film re-rollers want to do it, I'd be happy to do it online with anyone. He's going to do a film re-roll, you don't know what it is. And
I hate to try and jump the queue, but surprise. I need to hop off so that my wife can have a meeting in the same room that I'm in. So
okay, please share
It's okay. I'll just shut up. Please share your podcast.
Drink something, say something.
Drink something, say something. You can find us mostly on Instagram. Drink something, say something. That's us. That's me. If you're not tired of my voice, go listen to it. It's pretty fun. It's the worst beer podcast ever.
It really is very fun.
And thanks for having me. As always, this was super fun. And thank you for putting it all together.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, beta.
Steven.
Yes,
I haven't forgotten you. Would you like to share your social media?
And... Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at ShazamRage, ShazamRage. And I also am the admin for the Film Reroll Appreciation Group on Facebook. So please feel free to, yeah.
Thank you for approving me.
300 odd members.
Neat. Thank you so much for approving me. I just found you recently.
Yeah, it's trying to get everybody in. The old admin needed some time away, so I was like, I can do this. And every time the episode goes out, it gets put up there, and then 48 hours after, the spoiler post gets put up, so people can discuss.
All right, I've hit join group, so if you're going to be evil and just decline through it.
Awesome.
Horse holes.